Hey, it's Craig from Revolution Radio. This is just a reminder. Can you hit that subscribe button? That way you never miss a new episode of Canadian AF. Thanks so much for listening to Revolution Radio and enjoy this podcast. Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening, everyone out there. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to a program called Canadian AF, Canadian as Fuck, right here on Revolution Radio Canada. My name is DJ Craig G, alongside my man Dimitri Alexiou. This is episode 83. We've done 83 of these bad boys. Can you believe it? Wicked stuff.
It amazes anyway, you every time.
As always. It really does, honestly. Like, I'm surprised anybody still tunes in. It's great.
Every time the number goes up by one, and you're amazed every time.
Yeah, well, listen, as you would say, Dimitri, time marches on. I'm Craig, Dimitri, the two of us here, joined by an awesome band called Trick Casket. Our friends Connor and Joey are on the program tonight, and super stoked to have them. So we're going to get right into this. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of great music to get to before the end of the program. So Dimitri, take it away, please.
Canadian as Fuck would like to begin by acknowledging the Indigenous peoples of all the lands that we are on today. While we meet tonight on a virtual platform, we would like to take a moment to acknowledge the importance of the lands we call home. And we do this to reaffirm our commitment and responsibility in improving relationships between nations, to improving our own understanding of local Indigenous peoples and cultures, and to try to move forward in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration.
I'm based somewhere in York region. Our man Dimitri right now is in a very wonderful looking hotel room in the middle of downtown London, Ontario. So he's an absolute trooper joining us tonight. And of course, our friends Joey and Connor are coming to you from wonderful gothic basements. This is going to be great. So guys, Connor, Joey, welcome to the program, guys. Thanks so much for being here tonight. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, awesome. Our man Derek Lewis brought you guys to us. He was like, you've got to get in touch with my buddy Connor, and this band is awesome. I've been checking out your stuff, and you guys are just a proper industrial band. So applaud you. It's awesome. And we've got a few things to talk about, which I'm actually going to write down, including my good friend Brian Hogue. I don't know if either of you know him.
Oh, you should know him.
You should definitely know my good friend Brian Hogue. So I'm going to have to introduce you guys. He has an industrial band out of Burlington called Conduit. So anyway.
Oh, I know Brian.
Yeah. So we'll talk about Brian in a little bit. But first, we have to talk about you guys. Connor, let's start with you. Where and when did your love for music start? When did that get going for you?
Oh, God. I was...
probably a wee lad,
8 years old, maybe.
Yep. About the same for me. Yep.
Yeah. Just getting like, I remember my uncle when I was a wee young chap at like family barbecues, he'd slip me cassettes of like Korn's first album or like Slipknot's first album or something. And he's like, don't tell your mother. And then as a young kid like that, I wasn't allowed to listen to that kind of stuff for whatever reason. So I had this little tiny, just crappy little cassette player that I'd stole from my dad because it was like an airport cassette player from back in the day. And then, you know, it was like really old, like white and orange airport headphones. That's why I had to go along with it. But I had to listen with the music like with one headphone off, because if I heard my mom or my dad coming, I have to
really
shuffle. Yeah.
You should have set up mirrors. You should have set up mirrors throughout the house, you know? Like, so
that would have been smart.
Is that what you did, Dimitri? That sounded very specific.
That sounds very elaborate.
I think that was very elaborate. Did it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, absolutely. And Joey, what about you?
Oh man, I'm gonna date myself here, but around the Satanic Panic of the 80s. And
fabulous.
Yeah, it was around then, and I had very say Christian parents that didn't allow me to listen to a lot of metal and stuff like that. So this was around the time. Oh, this was around the time that Twisted Sister was in court and Ozzy was in court. Yeah. They were taking everyone in court.
Judas Priest and everybody.
Yeah. And it went so far as even in the 90s when Poison came out with Open Up and Say Ah, and I had that cassette tape. I remember it had like the demon girl in the cover with the tongue sticking out. Well, when my parents saw that, oh my God, it was like World War III in my house.
Lost their minds.
Oh yeah. And then they saw the Iron Maiden cassettes, and then it was like, ugh.
I remember when my mom, or it might have been my dad, when they saw like the Iron Maiden cover, Number of the Beast.
Okay.
That was it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah, for even sure. Yeah.
Motley Crue shot at the devil. It was like, they're like, you're listening to satanic music and blah 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 blah. And I was like, oh my God. Meanwhile, we got a ghetto blaster outside. We're playing road hockey, just listening to Maiden. Like that's what we did up north.
Like so, Joey. Like, okay.
Yeah, sorry, Joey. Where were you from? Where are you from?
I was born and raised in Sudbury. And then we moved actually more north than that, a small town called Englehart, which is between Kirkland Lake and New Liskeard, so about 7 hours north of here.
Wow.
And but we moved around a lot, so I lived in Calgary for a bit, and we lived everywhere. Yeah. And then I came down to Toronto when I was 60, and then that's when I discovered The Edge and started becoming a fan of that, and discovered all the old goth clubs in Toronto at the time back then. So my first club I went to was Catch 22.
Of course.
Yeah. And I snuck in cause I was underage.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of stuff, Joey, did your parents listen to? Because I can probably relate.
They didn't listen to a lot of music in the house, but if they did, my stepmom she thought she was like a prophet, so she listened to a lot of just gospel music, and my dad would listen to more like country, like old style country.
Okay. All right, so
where Trucks and Girlfriends were truly lost.
Yeah.
Connor, where did you grow up, buddy? Sorry.
I grew up.
I was going to say, it wasn't a very big musical household.
Yeah.
No.
Mine neither. I had to listen to Elvis and Shania Twain 24/7 because my mom loved it.
Wow.
But I grew up in Guelph, Ontario.
So neither of you are from originally from Toronto. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of these small town souls, gothic souls, finding one another. That's fucking awesome. I love it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So much bullying.
Yeah, a lot of bullying led us here.
Isn't so when they say lost trucks and lost girlfriends for country music, isn't bullying one of like the goth like music traits? Like
that's exactly of, it.
Yeah absolutely much. Yeah. Goth and industrial, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I've so had guys my head shoved in many urinals
yeah.
to get here.
Haven't we all?
Yeah.
So, guys, Connor, let's start with you. Let's go through some musical influences, because this is one of the things I love to do with our guests, essentially to let us know how you got started in music, when and where, and all that stuff. That's all great, but I really am interested in your influences, because for me, that kind of just, you know, basically tells the band that you are today.
Yeah. Well, two of my favorite bands of all time, like top tier, would be Korn and Nine Inch Nails. And then I was like, the idea I had in my head initially, like years ago when I started Trick Casket, was I'm like, in another timeline, like what if Trent Reznor started Korn?
Yeah.
Or Jonathan nice. Davis started Nine Inch Nails.
Started Nine Inch Nails. Yeah. Nine Inch Nails, yeah.
But among that, it's like Skinny Puppy and Front 242, Frontline Assembly, Ministry, all the classic industrial bands. Mm-hmm. And then that giant like new metal wave that came at the mid to late 90s into the 2000s. So I got like Slipknot and Korn again and like Disturbed, Limp Bizkit. But then also it's like a bunch of different kind of like melodic death metal, like Scar Symmetry and In Flames. Mm. But I also do really love, like what Joey mentioned, I actually really do love like old style country music, like 30s and 40s, 50s. Yeah. So like my influences are kind of all over the place.
What's that, Dimitri?
Like Hank Williams and Jim Reeves and stuff.
Yes. Hank Williams is one of my favorites.
Joey.
It's weird. My favorite bands change almost weekly. So, mm-hmm. growing up, it was Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses were my two biggest growing up as a
fucking
teenager.
Fucking awesome. Yep.
And then it just all went kind of downhill from there. Which way you want to look at it, right?
That's funny.
But yeah, for me, it was always a lot of Korn, a lot of Nine Inch Nails. Before I got into that, it was funny, though, because I went through, I was playing in a lot of punk bands back in the day, back in the Barry Taylor days.
Yeah.
We actually played at the Edge with some of my old punk bands, and it was a lot of fun. And from there, the older I got, the heavier my taste in music got. So it just kept going heavier and heavier. Now, one of my favorite bands right now, probably Gojira, just because I'm such a huge fan of Mario's drumming.
Okay.
I could just listen to him drum for hours. Same with Korn. I love both their old drummer and their new drummer. So Nine Inch Nails is just a lot of fun, sure nostalgic. Is. It's just, I just love it. Yeah, so it's always changing. It's
nice. That's all. So I feel that it should for good musicians. Right?
Like the one of my favorite bands of all time are still The Police. Like, yeah.
Nice.
Stuart Copeland is my all-time favorite drummer. And
oh, is he? Yeah.
All-time.
All-time.
So okay. you're the drummer in the band, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Fantastic. I'm a drummer, too, so.
Oh, awesome.
My drums are actually right behind me.
Did they just become best friends?
I think did we just become best friends? Do you want to do karate in the garage? Yeah. So
right there. They're my electronic kits right there where I practice.
Fantastic. Good for you, brother. Yeah, I love Stuart Copeland. Huge fan. And I think John Bonham is still my god from Zeppelin. So still my guy.
So Connor, do you think that you brought up nu metal? Do you think that nu metal gets too much shit?
Yes.
In retrospect? Okay.
Yeah, it totally does. Yeah. Everyone loves to shit on nu metal, but I think it's just kind of become the easy target. It's like if people actually paid attention, I think it would be I think some people's minds could be changed. And also half the people that bitch and talk shit about nu metal, it's like they listen to it anyway. Let's face it.
That's right.
It's funny because nu metal's made this kind of resurgence lately as well, and all the old nu metal bands are coming back. And
yeah,
Gold Chamber came back. They did that reunion tour, and all these other Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit was playing Coachella. Yeah.
And they're going on tour this summer.
I don't know whether Limp Bizkit ever really completely went away.
No, I don't think so either. I think they had like a identity crisis when what's his face left.
Wes Borland.
Thank you. Yeah.
But he came back.
He came back. And then they became good again. So
because Wes Borland came back. Yeah.
That's what happened with Korn when Brian Head Welch left in 2005.
Yeah.
And then they had those really weird 7 years of what's going on with these guys?
Yeah.
And then he came back in 2012, and then that 2013 album came out, and suddenly they're amazing again.
Yeah. That's amazing what happens when the original lineup gets back together, right?
Yeah.
Don't give any funny ideas, Connor.
Yeah. I'm not going anywhere. That's funny.
Shit, I exposed myself.
Okay, so you guys formed, is a Trick Casket formed back in 2017?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what sort of projects and things like that did you guys have going on before those days? And then we'll get into the TC.
I had with a good friend of mine, his name's Ryan, we had a kind of just a more casual alternative metal kind of band, but it was mixed with EDM because at the time that was really hot, and I actually really like EDM. I don't care about that. So I'm we had a small thing going, but it never got off the ground. We didn't finish any songs properly because I think both of us were too scared to do it, we're too shy anyway. And then before that, I was briefly in this surf rock band playing keyboards in college. Yeah.
You really did do the Trent Reznor thing.
Yeah.
Keyboards and a band that you would never think of doing.
When Trent was in Exotic Birds, yeah.
And Option 30 and all that stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For a surf band, would you be doing Bon Tempe organ settings?
I was going to say probably a lot of organ, right?
It's mostly that, but also just a lot of pads where it's just a chord for eight bars, another chord for another eight bars.
Right.
It sounds like arduous work.
It wasn't very fulfilling. But, and then before that, I didn't really have any sort of project in between, but in high school, I had a new metal meets metalcore kind of band all through high school and just after high school, but we were really just awful.
Fabulous.
Oh, man.
That's great. Joey, what about you, my friend?
Oh, I've been doing this for about 30 years. So I've been in so many freaking bands. I started off doing more alternative, I don't even know what to call it, whatever the Chili Peppers were back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's like a band doing that kind of stuff. That
alternative funk kind of stuff.
Like Uplift Mofo. Uplift Mofo.
And then from there, we were touring around with a band called Pez and another band called Soiled with Fish. Pez are now known as Billy Talent. And we all grew up in the Mississauga area. Mm-hmm. The whole Masonic. The guy that did our video, actually, is a guy that used to organize. His name's Trevor Bowman. He used to organize all the shows that we'd all play at. And then I joined his band with the guitar player of Billy Talent, Ian DeSaw.
Yeah.
And you may remember Ben worked at CFNY for a while.
Yeah.
So I grew up with those guys and played in a lot of bands throughout those years. And then from there, I went back into the Motown hip hop stuff with a kind of a trip hop band. Mm-hmm. And then from there into a ska punk band. And then from there, went back into a rock band called the Stereo Hoax. With Bowman, and that's the band that I ended up playing Edgefest with, that Bookie got us on that show that I was telling you about before we aired.
Yeah, that's right.
And did that for a few years, and then I was married and retired for a bit, and then I just came back. And before I met Connor, it was funny because I was in a band called Phantom High, and they're still playing. Great band. And we played with Trick Casket a bunch of times, and I remember when I saw Trick Casket, I told Connor, I was like, yeah, you ever lose Ryan on the drums, I want to play that stuff because it's so fun, right?
No, it was more hey, why don't you fire a drummer because I want to play drums.
I never said that, Ryan. I never said that. and then it just so happened that he moved out east, so Connor gave me a shout, and I started playing with Trick Casket right after that.
Fantastic.
Oh, and I was in a band called The Nightmares for All. I keep forgetting about them, which were kind of like a punk surfy kind of band that I call it a bovine band. It was just a band that played the bovine a lot.
Perfect.
Bovine band.
Oh, I love
it. There's a few of those in Toronto, bovine bands.
Yeah, for sure.
And so what are some of your favorite places to play?
I think right now, especially the Velvet show that we had at the new revamped, revitalized Live Nation owned Velvet Underground. It was actually
Live Nation took over that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah. Oh my God, was that a fun show?
Yeah.
That was a good show. That was the sound there was great. The stage is great. My personal favorites were always Lee's and Horseshoe.
I love Lee's. I love
just the
Lee's.
Sound was always so good. And they treated us pretty good.
Underrated
the Opera House. Well, you see, the Opera House is one
I
of
love
my
the Opera House. Yeah,
Live Nation take control of it.
They did, yeah. But that's like
Live
my
Nation's
cursed
buying
venue.
Everything.
Yeah, Opera House was always a cursed venue for me. It's weird. I've played my biggest shows there, and my worst shows there. Mm. It's always like some sort of equipment failure happened at every Opera House show I've done.
A really underrated place to play is the Rock Pile, in a
yeah.
Oh,
and where
really?
Is
no, it's... Rock Pile's way out in Etobicoke.
Yeah,
oh, okay. Yeah. See, the old owner of Dom, the old owner of the Big Bop. Okay. When he sold the Big Bop, he opened up that place, the Rock Pile, and it's funny. We get a show there all the time, and we're always like, "Oh fuck, it's so fucking far. No one's gonna come, and do we really want to do it?" And we always say yes, and we do it, and it ends up being a fucking blast every time. And
it's
and
so much fun.
Awesome. Jake Disman
is a master of what he does.
Yeah, gives us awesome sound, awesome lights.
So
yeah.
In the Twitch chat tonight, Vanessa Taylor was talking about a gig that you guys killed. I'm just curious, Vanessa, if you meant the gig at the Velvet. So, and also, Taylor. Yeah, if you have questions.
Oh, yeah.
if you have questions or comments for the guys in Trick Casket, come on to Twitch and sign up, and free to sign up and ask and chat away.
Mm-hmm. I saw Vanessa mention Timmins. Yeah, I've done that drive quite a few times. Highway 11. The worst.
Yeah. No. The worst is the drive to where Dimitri is right now.
No.
That's
no,
the worst. No. No, it sucks.
No. The worst. You know what? Like, the worst is, I think. I've driven to Sault Ste. Marie. That's
what? That's a long one.
Last summer I drove to Manitoulin Island. That's over a 5-hour drive. That's a good trek.
Yeah.
Too. But Manitoulin,
I've done the cross Canada drive, like through the prairies. That's awful. There's just nothing.
Really?
Nothing to see. It's just flat.
I don't drive, so I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Seriously? A passenger? Yeah. Have you been a passenger?
I've been a passenger, yeah. But...
He's a passenger princess, that one.
Oh, I sure am. Because any sort of long distance, any sort of boring road trip, it's like I just fall asleep. It's Joey's problem.
That's awesome. Every time I hear the word passenger too, instantly I instantly think of Iggy Pop. No, Iggy Pop. I'm a passenger.
Oh, that's, speaking of influences, Iggy Pop's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So
I forgot to mention Deftones. They're one of my hugest drum influences too. Abe Cunningham is I bought his snare drum.
Abe is fucking awesome. He is a wicked, wicked player. Yeah, I love Deftones too. They're great.
Vanessa mentioned the Velvet gig, yeah.
Yeah, she was specifically talking about the Velvet gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big one for us because that was with Solar Fake and Suicide Commando, legends in the industrial scene. And so that was a fun one for us. And that was, we had a blast.
Yeah, that was like a next level kind of show for us. Yeah. And
what made it next level?
Well, Solar Fake and especially Suicide Commando, it's like they've been longtime heroes of mine. Like Suicide, like they're all based like across the pond over in Europe. And you know, they're like, they can fill stadiums over there, so it was kind of surprising that they could we played at Velvet. Yeah.
They played at Velvet and wow. Okay.
And they're just massive. And also, you know, it's like when you meet someone that you look up to so much, you're kind of worried that, you know, well, that old saying, like, never meet your heroes. It's like, no, I'm so glad I did. They were the nicest fucking people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were so nice.
Except that drummer destroyed my cymbal.
Oh, yeah.
Cracked it. And he was 25 years old. I was like, how do you hit it that hard? You're 65. And he did.
Nice.
I wonder what it feels like for a band like Suicide Commandos that can fill stadiums in Europe. And then they come over here. Is it so fucking cool to play a small club like the Velvet Underground?
Yeah.
Or is it like, oh, like the kind of dreading it? I wonder what their attitude towards that night was.
It's funny because it can go both ways, right? Like it can kind of be like refreshing because it's back to the roots and it's back to smaller, more intimate venues and more.
Where everybody starts out,
Hopefully they looked at it that way.
Well, they even mentioned how much fun it was. So,
no, that's cool. Yeah. That's very cool.
Because we actually hung out with them like most of the day prior. Like we had dinner with them. We went to the CN Tower and did touristy shit with them. And, like Noel Peters, he of Inertia Entertainment, he kind of just curated everything, as well as my friend Scott.
Did you guys do the edge walk?
Hell no.
No.
Hell no, you wouldn't
catch me. No, I wouldn't either. No.
I don't think it was open when we went. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't catch me dead out there either. No way.
That's not for me either. I just thought, like, you know, if you're doing the touristy things, you know. But
we want a good time. We don't want to die.
I didn't want rubbery knees before the show.
Yeah. I'm just gonna put this out there. There's a wonderful 80s band, industrial band called Mel Havoc. I would love to see you guys do a show with them. That would be fucking great. You don't live with Jimmy. You don't live with Jimmy, do you?
I live with Jimmy.
Jimmy!
No fucking way. Are you serious?
I live with Jimmy, yeah.
You live with Jimmy Lamort. Shut the fuck up.
Jimmy!
Are you actually... I want to interview Jimmy. Are you fucking serious now?
You should, like, shoot him an email. Jimmy, come here!
That's so funny.
Jimmy, you got fans. But yeah, all seriousness, I do live with the guy. Yeah,
that's fucking.
Well, isn't that isn't the world small?
Yeah. So funny you mentioned Mal Havoc. I'm like, oh, as a matter of fact,
that's so amazing.
See if I can get it.
Yeah. No, he's they are just properly awesome. So yeah, I definitely would love to have Jimmy on the program sometime. So
Jimmy's got
let him know.
He's got a new album that he's been working very diligently on, and I may or may not be having vocals on that as well.
Fantastic. That's great. Awesome. Good stuff. Oh my God. Look, now everybody's chiming in. Oh my God, Mal Havoc.
Oh look, Mal Havoc stole the show. Thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah. Right? That's so funny. All right. Okay, we have to get back to Trick Casket. Yeah. So as far as albums and everything, I was wondering, well, obviously we'll start with you, Connor, because you are the dude. As far as discography, how did you start putting all of this together, and what are the records, just so everyone knows? I know because I've been playing them, but just for everybody out there.
Yeah. Well, at first it was actually very scary because I was like, still at the time, I was still way too scared to kind of sing in front of people. And then when I'm like, well, I'm not singing in front of anyone. I'm just recording my own voice. And then, but it's like, you know, when you hear your own voice back, you're like, oh, Jesus. So it took a lot of kind of trial and erroring to get over that kind of hump. And then I released my first song. The first song that was recorded ever is called a song called Voices. That was released in December of 2017.
Is that under Trick Casket?
Yeah, that's Trick Casket. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then like a couple weeks later, I just kind of winged it and I just said screw it. I just released my second song called Let You Die. Let You Die has been, people seem to really like that song, so I'm like, all right, well, and it's actually a lot of fun to play too. It's pretty groovy.
We still play Voices too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I spent the rest of 2018 really finalizing the first album, which the first album is called Misery. And actually a lot of songs off that album were actually they were kind of B-sides from what me and Ryan were working on already, so I had a good starting point anyway. And then
this song is so good. I was listening to this.
Oh, thanks.
I bet this would be a lot of fun to play on drums, eh, Joey?
It is, especially when the off cymbal starts coming.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love that too.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, I just wanted to throw that down. It's so funny you mentioned that. I'm like, oh, that's the beginning. Perfect. I was just it's literally lit up in green on my screen. Yeah. So I was just listening to it like 3 hours ago. Yeah.
Sick. Yeah. But yeah, and then from there, I just kind of curate a band together and then played first I played a couple shows completely solo, just backing track, and I was singing over them. And then
that takes guts, my friend. Good for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely threw up before the show a couple of
times. I was going to ask you if you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice, for sure.
You were? Then, you were going to specifically ask if he threw up?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Okay. I would if I was going out onto like the Velvet Underground stage or something like that.
I had such stage fright for a good chunk of the first part of like actually even having a backing band. I had such stage fright that it was very regular that while we're setting up, I would have to dip into the bathroom because I would throw up a little bit.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
But would you settle in after like 5-10 minutes every time or what?
Usually after the second lyric that I would sing, it'd be fine. second word.
So usually after the first song is.
Yeah. After the second word of like the first song, I'm like, okay, that's great.
All right. And how are you nowadays?
Yeah. How are you these days?
Oh,
fine, right?
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine. I'm pretty comfortable up on stage now.
Oh, good.
It's like it's just a matter like I kind of replaced all that stage fright with just being like, because as soon as our intro starts, I kind of just get into like character, so to speak. So I kind of just I got like personal blinders on or something. So I just go on stage and then I'm just like, just let it out. Whatever, whatever's bugging you, just get it out.
That's it, brother. Plug in and let it rip. That's it.
Yep. Exactly. And we have a second album called Anhedonia, which was written over the pandemic, kind of in a response to the pandemic, because everyone has a pandemic album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that one was like a lot of experimentation. I remember I wasn't living here at the time, but where I was living, me and my old guitar player who helped me on that record, we had like just this massive kind of like spaceship of like guitar pedals and like like drum synths and just like a bunch of like things tied up with like a MIDI keyboard. And a lot of it was kind of like live off the floor. It was like we kind of just like sequenced everything, spent hours upon hours curating it. And then when it was finally like ready, we kind of just start hitting all the elements as I came in. And then I would just kind of sing right then and there on the spot. So a lot of it sounds very kind of, a lot of it sounds very rough and very kind of just, it's not time aligned or anything. It was kind of just like, trust your gut and hope it works.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. That's true industrial right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sample a bunch of shit, hit play and see if they all line up. I think that's another,
that was the recording session. Industrial. Yeah.
that's another mantra of just, industrial.
It's and just, hope it lines up.
Press play and see if it lines up. Yeah.
Yeah. And then our third album, I made completely 100% by myself. It's called Harm. Mm-hmm. And that album was also a response to, I had an accident over the pandemic. I was a victim of a stabbing.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
So yeah. that album helped me get out all the, for lack of a better word, shit from kind of just recovering physically and mentally from that. And that one was like I would work, I would lock myself in a room, and actually to get into the mindset even more as if I wasn't traumatized enough, I put a black garbage bag and taped it to my window so I couldn't have any light come in. And all I just relied on just lights from my synthesizers, my guitar pedals, and my computer. And I would just work 12 hours a day for a good like couple months. And it was,
you went into ultra goth mode.
I sure did.
How bad were you hurt? Yeah.
I was hurt pretty bad. I was in the hospital for a good like week and a half, and then I was still recovering after that for about 2.5 months before I was finally kind of like getting back to the swing of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got stabbed right in the ribs.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did this happen?
Right outside my place, actually. I won't go into the full thing because it's the whole thing. But there was a peeping Tom looking into my roommate's window, and I was outside having a cigarette, and I just looked over beside me, and like right beside the garden, I saw just the peeping Tom doing his thing, and I was like, dude. So then I called him out, and then I went to call the police, but I guess when he heard police, he just charged, and then rest is history.
Jeez.
The album Harm has a number of tracks on it. Blistered, Harm, No Sanctuary, mm-hmm. Leech's Villain, and Put Me Down. I think a lot of those titles, I can kind of understand where a lot of those titles would come from in regards to being the victim of a stabbing. However, I Hate Myself.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could talk about that song for a minute, because that almost feels to me like it is suspended somehow from the rest of the record.
Yeah. Yeah, because that one, it's in the middle of the record for a reason, because there was a point where I was kind of just, I felt like I might have been losing it. I went back into therapy. I was self-medicating very, very hard because I didn't have a coping mechanism. I just didn't educate myself enough to do that. So I was kind of, yeah, I was self-medicating to the nth degree. And then I don't know what it was, if it was just some sort of survivor's kind of, not guilt, but I don't know. I don't know what it was. I still can't name it to this day, but yeah. And then eventually I just like, I remember coming out the other end. I realized I was self-medicating way too much, and I was closed off from the rest of the world. I wasn't really sure what I was really doing. I'm like, this isn't me.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to just strip that away and just kind of make that an own character of myself. Also, like, the big influence for that song was the Downward Spiral as a whole. Just that character going into just utter collapse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say that actually felt, it felt a lot Downward Spiral-ish to me. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. Joey, were you involved in the band in that time?
No. I only just joined, what, a year and a half ago? Okay. I would say. Has it been 2 years? 1 year?
It's been,
I can't.
It was like October 2022.
Yeah.
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 Nice.
Yeah. So nice. All the new stuff that you'll hear is with me on it. Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. Great. Yeah, no, I found Harm to be a really, really interesting record.
Oh, thank you.
Let me back that up for a second. When I say interesting, I don't mean bad. I'm just saying, for me, it's different from everything else that kind of was its predecessor. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But that was the thing, kind of like in the middle of that record, you have I Hate Myself, and I'm like, okay, now that you've explained, obviously, the situation or what happened, now I totally get it. Whereas kind of I'm listening to this record thinking to myself, you know, this is a survivalist record to me, but then all of a sudden you have this statement in the middle of it just basically saying I hate myself. So I just found that really interesting. So anyway.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
It's a fucking great record, man. It really
Oh,
is.
Thank you.
Really, oh, some of the best heavier songs are on that one that I love playing, like Blistered and Villain.
Villain. Villain's a lot of fun to play live.
Yeah. Yeah. We still play those ones. Blistered, we have to pick and choose because it's a little taxing to play. But yeah,
I can imagine.
A lot of double bass.
Definitely. Yeah. Fuck yes. Yeah. It has to be double bass. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. It has to be these days. Beautiful, a really interesting cover on that record too, with all of the upside down crosses and the sort of distorted image on
that. That was
what is that exactly?
So that was just in the depths of just being like emotionally overthrown, and around the time I made that song, I Hate Myself. That's actually my bedroom. It's actually just everything's completely blocked out. It's like it's, you know, oversaturated and kind of edited to the nth degree, but I had these hanging lights that I just hung up for whatever reason, and then I have a bunch of like earrings that I can like hook up little chains to and everything, so I actually put them on. I hung up the crosses upside down, and then I turned off all the lights.
Of course you did.
And then made it completely dark, and then I kind of mirrored the image as well in like in post, and then and then that's just how it kind of turned out to be. So that's the representation of not only my living environment, but my headspace.
Yeah, for sure. Fuck, that's amazing, man. That is so freaking cool. It really
Thanks.
Is. Anyway, this, you got to check this out, folks. It's called Harm. It's a wicked, wicked, wicked record. Now, present day, boys. Let's talk about this process now. Where was the latest project recorded?
We recorded Filth with our friend Brett Carruthers. He's in A Primitive Evolution and also The Birthday Massacre. Mm-hmm. And he has his own studio with Stu from Playdead. And we just reached out to Brett to see if he was interested in working with us, and then sure enough he was. And then after that whole process was a lot more lighthearted and a lot more fun to make than Harm was. Like for sure.
Yeah.
And so Brett also kind of became our kind of new kind of standard producer for us, because it's like we want to keep growing and we want to keep getting better at what we do. And now we have like a good kind of support structure to help us get there, and Brett is definitely like the pivotal pillar in that.
Yeah, because we wanted to work with a producer that would not only understand the sound that we're going for and be a fan of that sound, but also be able to kind of push us outside of our comfort zone and to try new things, new vocal styles, new drumming styles, like and he really did that, right? And it really took us from here to like here in terms of songwriting and then production value as well. Right. Yeah. So
a drastic leap.
Yeah, it was, and he's just an absolute pleasure to work with. So even all the songs that we'll be releasing this year are all from those sessions with Brett. So, well, not all, but most. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Especially this next single that we have for later in the month and early April, our next single was also recorded with Brett, and he produced it and made it sound nice.
Yeah, if you're fans of Ministry, you'll like this one.
Fuck
yeah!
Either of you guys catch Ministry when they were in town?
Yes,
I did.
Yeah,
you did.
Egg. Nice. I heard it was a good show.
It was a really good show.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that show was Frontline Assembly were the ones that impressed me the most. Like,
yeah, they did actually steal the show, even from Gary
Newman. Blew me away. Yeah, and I'm a fan. Like, so they had John Sirens drumming for them, who I've been following on Instagram for a while. And but it was just so freaking good. Like, they were tight. The sound was great. It was just awesome. And I mean, Gary Newman's a legend, but
yeah.
But for some weird reason, Frontline really grabbed my attention.
Yeah.
And Ministry were Ministry. You know, it was great.
It's Jorgensen. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Uncle Al's just
Uncle Al's still prancing shit around the stage in a circle. And yeah. Rah,
yeah. Perfect. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he did when I saw them in 90. Oh, I saw them in Buffalo. It was like the Thunder Club or something like that. It was right downtown Buffalo. And I think it was 97 I saw them. And they were fucking insane. Like, just that's actually one of the craziest mosh pits that I've ever seen was that show.
Was Ministry? Ministry
show. Yeah.
I was telling the friends that I was with that Ministry, I remember them from like Lollapalooza 2.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep,
we grew up with the warning of you do not go into a Ministry mosh pit.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
They don't help you back up. That's the only band they didn't help you back up if you fell in that mosh pit. You know,
yeah.
Nowadays, it's, you know, everyone helps everyone. But back then, if you get into that Ministry circle pit, you're done.
You're toast.
Yeah.
Go so at your own did. Risk.
Yeah.
I remember Ministry. The very first time I saw Ministry was the Mine is a Terrible Thing to Taste record. And mm-hmm. It was Martin Streak doing the high school video road show, the CFNY video road show at my high school.
Yeah.
And in order to do a sound check, he played Burning Inside. And I never heard Ministry before. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And I just like instantly the next morning went out, bought the record. And I've been, I actually still have my vinyl copy of Mine is a Terrible Thing. So
I got that on a record too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other night when like, cause that was the first song of the encore when he came out and he said Burning Inside. I'm like, yes.
Nice. That's fucking amazing. I wish I went. Anyway, that's great. That's good for the two of you to have gone and seen that. Now, speaking of Ministry, and there's just a bazillion other bands. Al Jorgensen famously is like, you know, as far as our recording and songwriting process goes, we just basically turn a bunch of shit on and see what sticks kind of thing, right? So yeah. It's interesting. And Genesis Peorage from Throbbing Gristle is even more classic. Is like, well, if it screams at us, then we put it on tape. If it doesn't, then we don't keep
it. It's like when Al was making Land of Rape and Honey, that was it. He was just like, I just connect everything together and was splicing tape together and just like hoped it lined up.
Exactly. How does Tricasket come up with not only a song but a record as well?
Oh, whoa. Man, it's funny because it's changing right now the way that we do it. It's
mm-hmm.
I mean, before it was Connor would do almost all of it, if not all of it, like in the previous stuff. And now it's interesting because now, like, an idea will come to the table and then Evan will add to it and then I'll add to it and then Connor will add to it again and then we kind of remix it and then we redo it and then we take it to Brett and then he does everything. And
so is it jammy? Is it jammy now?
No, I wouldn't say it's jammy.
It's like I'll make like a demo almost all the way through. I'll send it to the guys and then either it sucks or doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, all right. And then also I appreciate the brutal honesty where it's like, yeah, this sucks. I'm like, all right, back to the table. And then and then Evan will come up with an idea, be like, okay, I'm gonna add this and this. Or even just general feedback. It's like, you know, take this part out, but add this over here kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we all have such vastly different musical tastes, right? In terms of what we all grew up playing and all that's like Evan's what, a deathcore guy?
Yeah.
He's barely into industrial. He's into technical deathcore. And he's an amazing guitar player. So for him to play industrial, he's just like, you know.
But it's too easy.
He's so freaking good.
Yeah, right.
And some of the ideas he brings to the plate are fucking amazing. It's stuff that we wouldn't have thought of, right? Like, and it's crazy. And then Brendan, who's one of our newest guys on bass, he comes from a completely different background. So Brendan's a guy I've been playing with for the last 25 years, and all my past projects, but he's more of a reggae, like, parlor guy.
Trip hop. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Not really trip hop, but like, yeah, almost, yeah. It's weird. He's not, he's into traditional industrial, like old industrial, but not so much industrial metal, which is the kind of stuff that we do, right?
Like Henry Ford industrial?
Probably. Yeah.
You know? Drop Forge industrial, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Birmingham, England industrial. Yeah.
But more like the electronic, like the heavy electronic stuff.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Yeah.
I was going to say Neubauten?
Yeah, yeah. Einstein and Neubauten. Yeah, boy. Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Absolutely. And all that. The great krautrock stuff, too, with Can and Neu and all that.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. There's Coil. Just so much fucking good music. Oh, Coil. Absolutely. Absolutely. So much good music out there. Derek Lewis says hi.
He was at the video shoot.
He was at the ministry. Saw a ministry at Molson Park, Lollapalooza. I said, yeah, 93. I was there. They waited for the sun to go down. Pitch black, opened with Thieves. I remember that. And the entire audience goes.
Opening with Thieves? I couldn't. People would have lost their goddamn minds.
Yeah. I remember it. It was a really, really good show. Yeah, I've seen Ministry 3 times now. So they're fantastic.
Oh, wow.
I love Al.
We have to ask you about somebody who would share the stage with you, Care Failure of Die Mannequin. How did you? Yeah. And so she passed away last year.
Yeah.
How did that collaboration come to be?
Well, me and Care. Well, I've been a fan of Die Mannequin for even before Die Mannequin was really a thing, when Kill Cheerleader was actually the original band before Tony joined, or I think maybe Tony already joined by then. But I've been a fan of Care's music since I was 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. So I was already listening to like early Die Mannequin and Kill Cheerleader way back then, and then it kind of carried through the years. I saw her play with Guns N' Roses, and then I saw her play with Marilyn Manson, and then they were like the opening act, and then but they always stuck in my brain. I'm like, this is a good band. And then just, you know, through the years, just years kind of came and went. And then one day I went for a drink with my friend at a bar here in Toronto, and then he's like, oh, my friend's going to come by. She does music, too. I'm like, sweet. And then I heard the door open. I looked over, and I'm like,
that's Care Failure.
I'm like, you didn't fucking tell me your friend was Care Failure. So I had to, like, calm down and have, like, a conversation. And she was the sweetest person ever.
Yeah, Craig's having the similar reaction to Jimmy.
I'm trying to get Jimmy out here.
Yeah, still yelling. You've got fans over here.
Jimmy.
but yeah, then just over time, me and Care just became like the best of friends. Like, we did everything together. We'd like, she would even like, she would call me at like 2:15 on a Tuesday and just be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm sleeping. I got to go to bed. She's like, nah, fuck that. Come out.
And is that what her speaking voice was like?
Yeah. Okay. And then, she would like, she would come to our rehearsals and like just sit in with our rehearsals and like rock, like fully rock out, like in rehearsal, kind of just give us more energy to keep like playing as like better and better.
Yeah.
It
was the show that we played. I don't know if we played it with you or if it was a show that I went to at the Bovine where you had Kara come on stage.
Yeah, Phantom High was on that bill too.
Yeah, because that's when I was like, I need to play drums for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she brought like a whole different, awesome energy on that stage. It like completely filled it, you know? It was.
Yeah. Because I, it actually happened like just earlier that day where me and Kara was hanging out, and then I was just like, well, she asked me like what time the show was, and then I'm like, it's at this time. I'm like, do you just want to come with me? Like, and then I just shot out there. I'm like, do you want to play a song? Like, do you want to sing a song with me? And she was just over the moon. She's like, hell yeah, let's do it. Because that's awesome. Just her personality. It's like if you have an artistic idea, she wants to execute it right then and there. She's like, let's not wait, let's go do it. I'm like,
that's awesome. Fucking awesome, man.
So yeah, so we like she helped us with Loden, and then we did makeup together, and then she sang "Let You Die with Us," which by the way, being a fan of someone for so long at that point. Mm-hmm. And then looking to the right of me and seeing one of my heroes singing my song after I watched her play live in front of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Multiple mm-hmm. times. That was just like a time stand still in your brain kind of moment where I'm like, this is cool as hell.
Yeah. No,
she's life awesome. Can be amazing.
Unfortunately, I never got a chance to meet her. I really wish that I had. If mm-hmm. I would have loved to have interviewed her on the
absolutely. Anyway,
rest in peace, Care.
Yeah,
she was just a proper fucking rocker. She was awesome. So, boys, yeah. Sorry, Dimitri, what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna. I was like, before we start talking about what live gigs you have, and we're gonna throw, and then we're gonna play filth. How do you feel you've evolved as a live performer over the years?
Mm.
I started taking care of myself. Yeah, that's like, well, I started educating myself and actually like trying to sing properly and not just kind of winging it anymore. So I don't hurt myself physically and like kind of ruin any sort of future that I may have. And then also just kind of learning with like my bandmates, like with Joey, of like what works and what doesn't. And also even like small intricate things where it's like, you might have to kind of syncopate with other musicians and kind of rehearse like stage moves. Yeah. And then just.
Yeah. Well, just even we even like looked at, one thing that we found really helpful was watching back videos of our live performances. Right.
Okay.
And, as cool as that might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really looking at, okay, where do we need to improve? Like, you know, right down to how we're standing on stage, how we're interacting with the audience, the banter, what songs work in what order, right? To allow for that kind of stage banter and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like just really taking a look at that. And then, by doing that and the more shows you play, it really, evolves your live show, right? And I think a lot of it too is because you've had the opportunity now to play with a lot of different musicians through the years, and you've been able to kind of evolve with that, right?
Yeah. And also kind of, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm very nervous before a show, but I'm not as nervous anymore. I'm starting to kind of feel kind of more comfortable, and this thought popped in my head. I'm one with the stage.
One with the stage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We were talking, Craig and I were talking last week with a band from Whitby, Oshawa called Mellow Honey. And we had a brief conversation about the art of screaming.
Melissa Cross.
Yeah. And the thing is, I was wondering, what advice do you have for being able to maintain maintain your voice night after night after night, performing and having that instrument, that scream available?
Lots of lemon tea.
No, like he's actually right. Lots of lemon tea with honey. If you got a gig, stay very hydrated throughout the whole day.
Yeah.
Warm up, but also warm down. Like after the show, when you go back to the green room, if you're lucky enough to get a green room, try to warm down and then just take it easy on the drinking. I've been learning to do that. But
good for you. Me too.
And also, as a whole, it's like I gotta recommend watching Melissa Cross's The Zen of Screaming. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That helped immensely. Because she works with like every metal musician, every sort of heavy alternative musician ever that does scream, she's worked with them.
Yeah.
Like name someone who's probably worked with them.
Will Ramos.
Yeah.
I fucking love him. Like I honestly love him. I don't know much in the way of Lorna Shore or anything like that, but every time that I see a video of him on YouTube or anything like that. And some of the stuff that he can do, I'm just like,
it's insane.
It's insanity.
It's insane.
He's just a wild animal up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think she has worked with him, right?
Yeah, she posted a video with him not too long ago.
Oh, okay.
Oh my
God. And then same with Sebastian from Bad Omens. She works with him a lot, and
yeah,
pretty much everyone.
There's I think it's a Japanese band, Deron Grey. I think that's
Deron Grey. Whoa, what a throwback!
Like, talk about vocals. Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow, dude. I haven't listened to that band in years.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw one of their videos recently, which is an interesting video. We'll just say that. A few
the
of their
word
videos
interesting
are.
Again.
Yeah. Very interesting. No, trust me. I'll send it to you, Dimitri. It's okay. Interesting. Anyway, but it's a great song. And anyway, I love all of that sort of stuff. I'm a huge Faith No More fan. I'm a Mike Patton fanatic.
Ooh, hell yeah.
I absolutely love.
Oh, yes.
For me, one of the original screamos, right? The original.
Yeah. One of the best vocalists of all time.
Yeah, yep. Me
hands
too.
Down.
Hands
yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's one of my all-time favorites. Oh, Lydia is saying Sam Astaroth too.
Oh, yeah, he's cool. one of our friends.
Yeah, he's got quite the vocal range as well. Nice. Yeah, he does. He's got that guttural scream down, that's for sure.
Yeah, his screams are pretty crazy. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin to try to practice to do that.
You know what, though? But you have an awesome scream. Like, that's the one thing I've always thought is you have a sick, sick scream. And especially in the new stuff that we're doing, it really comes through. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got a video release party coming up.
Yeah.
Speaking of new stuff. So tell us where and when that party is.
So that one is March 30th at Taco Taco. We're doing that at the start of Dwight's hybrid event. And then, so we're only doing three songs, showing the video, and then it's going to be a regular alternative dance night. Mm-hmm. And then I think so that's kind of a sneak preview. So if you want to see it before it goes online, come to that. Nice. And then, I think it's dropping April 2nd, right, Connor? April 2nd, yep. The following Tuesday?
Yep. Well, I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Fingers crossed.
And all goes to plan.
Yeah.
Is it the same director and crew for the Filth video?
No. Same, in a manner of speaking.
Because Corey, who directed Filth, he was also helping us shoot this new single called Bitchcraft. But also, the main director was Trevor Bowman, one of Joey's close friends.
Yeah, so he did. I've worked with Trevor on Phantom High's last video, and then with this one. And Evan, our guitar player, did a lot of the color grading, and he did the editing on our last video. Same with Corey. He was like our DOP. And we shot it in the basement of the Raid Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Raid, where all these big comic book artists do
where
their
is
thing.
It? Where is it?
The Queen and Ronsies, right?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Right across from Parkdale Hall.
Yeah. And funny enough, that's how we met Derek.
Yeah.
We had hired Ivy to come and be our demon lady. And Ivy being married to Derek, and he came to help out, and he was a massive help.
Such a massive help.
Oh my God, yeah.
A lifesaver. He got like our makeup way better than what we can do. He just was moving shit around. He was lifting things up. He was getting down and dirty in that asbestos covered basement.
What's the hashtag we're using? Dust Bowl for Death? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Anyways.
Is that basically why he's not been feeling well?
Could be, because like 3 days after the shoot wrapped, I was still like, when I blew my nose, there's still like gray matter in there.
I was blowing out blood for a couple days. Yeah.
Suffer for the art, my friends.
That's
yeah. Yeah.
Well, Derek's all right. He's okay. that fucker can stick around, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's this Lydia's. I love Ivy. We all do.
Hell yeah, Ivy rules.
Ivy's awesome.
She's awesome.
Boys, we've been chatting for literally an hour.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even remotely feel like it. You guys
does
are
not.
Wicked. This has been a fucking blast. And honestly, we can't thank you enough for coming on the program tonight.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank
what
you.
Is the, what's the date again of the Taco Taco show?
March 30th.
March 30th. Okay.
Yeah, at 10 o'clock.
That's in Kensington, right? Kensington?
Yeah. Okay. It's the upstairs Moonlight Lounge. And then April 2nd is when it drops everywhere else on all streaming platforms. And
fantastic.
And I guess you're going to have more live gigs after that, right?
Oh, yeah. We just got accepted for North by Northeast.
Fantastic. That's great. Yeah. Congratulations. Good
Thank
for you.
You
guys.
Yeah, we're really That's happy great. About that.
Nice.
They haven't told us what the venue is yet.
Yeah, but, they won't have yet. Yeah, but. Yeah. That is fantastic. So awesome. Website for people to check you guys out?
Trickcasket.com.
Perfect.
Joey made that website.
I did.
Nice.
Good. Yeah. And because
Derek made ours.
And because
made Revolution Radios. Yeah, yeah.
And because I asked this before we went to air, did the name come from a practical joke gone wrong?
Well, luckily no. But that would be a much cooler story. No, in a nutshell, there was so in 2016, like Halloween 2016, around there. Do you guys know like the Legends of Horror that Casa Loma puts on every Halloween? It's like a haunted house attraction.
Yep.
So me and my friend Ryan, we went there with a couple more, his girlfriend and another mutual friend of ours, and we went there, and it's like they lead you through the whole courtyard, and it's like, it's all spooky with Halloween decorations. And they got like some actors to kind of jump out and scare you. And it's like, I go there for the atmosphere at this point, 'cause I love that shit. And, there was this one prop. It was a casket, but it was way off from the center path. And it wasn't like even alluded to. There's no lights pointing towards it. It was just like this background prop.
Right.
And then it's like, these haunted house attractions never scare me at all. But when we walked past it, it cracked open, and then spring-loaded animatronic came screaming at us. And that actually got all of us. Like, it made us like jump. And we all looked at each other, and we shrugged it off. We giggled about it. We're like, I got us. God damn it. And as we're walking away, my friend Ryan was like, well, that was a trick casket. And we just laughed and laughed and laughed. And then I think it was like 8 months later, when I was trying to figure out a name for the band, that thought popped in my head. So I'm like,
yeah.
All right, I'll call it Trick Casket.
I think that's great. That's fantastic.
It's a good name. It's a good name.
Yeah.
So tell us about Filth.
Filth was, I wrote that song in response to just kind of where I was at in life. It's like, I wasn't really happy with my surroundings. I wasn't happy with the people I was interacting with. I kind of fell into a bad crowd, so to speak. I got kind of rent evicted from my apartment, so I had to move on like short notice. And I was living.
That shouldn't be able to be happening.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was living in this place in Parkdale that looked fine on first visit, but when we actually moved in, it was just this disgusting shithole, for lack of a better word. And the mixture of people I was surrounding myself with at the time, the apartment being an absolute disaster, and then just kind of reevaluating myself, I just felt dirty. And then just the lyrics kind of just came at that. And they're meant to be like, they can be about someone, like someone specific. They could be a generalization of a group of people, or you could actually take it as an introspection and you're kind of looking in the mirror talking to yourself. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of up for however you want to take it.
Yeah, yeah, up for interpretation.
Dirty, right. Dirty,
yeah. Dirty, dirty. Yeah, Joey ruined that song during recording with Brett from the Birthday Master. In the chorus, when it says "dirty," Joey was just like, "I don't know what you said, but you're just like dirty, dirty." Joey has a habit of ruining every song I like.
And there's Connor standing at the microphone in the vocal booth, going. Are you fucking serious now? Like, how am I supposed to do it? How am I supposed to do a take after that?
Yeah, now I have to do it seriously.
This time I changed it to Daddy Daddy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fuck off. I love it. These are the band shenanigans that I love.
Every song that I make, Joey likes to ruin it like that.
Perfect. Boys, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
This was awesome. Honestly, thanks a lot. And all the best. Best with the best with the gig, and of course the video release party. And if there's anything else that we can do for you guys, please don't hesitate to let us know. Let us Thank know you. When you've got gigs coming up, because we'll happily put them on our website for you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, certainly. Right. Yeah. Like certainly in time for North by Northeast. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Let us know when you guys are on that bill, because we'll be there for sure.
So. Oh, sick.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Boys, thank you so much. This is the latest. It is called Filthy. It's from the boys. Joey and Connor. They are called Trick Casket, a kick-ass industrial band from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's dirty, dirty, and it's Canadian as fuck.
83. I'm glad that's catching on. Fuck.
With Trick Casket right here, Revolution Radio Canada. Thanks, boys. Have a great night. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Yeah.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent, almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer.
and we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.